The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Tuesday morning, and welcome to another edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station in the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX-FM, with yours truly, Neville James. It is a gorgeous day in paradise. And I was driving in, you know, and I was saying, you know, when you watch TV, right, and there was a time when they'd say you are going to watch an event, or an event is available in HD, right, in high definition, right? Well, today is one of those days in the Virgin Islands that is the VI in HV, which is high visibility, because I could see the outline of St. John. And now in the morning, that don't be the case. You know, the mist or gato dissipate during the day, and then it become very, very clear, or like I was saying, St. Thomas clear in the afternoon. But I don't know, so I could see the outline solid, I believe, when we head up by the bypass a little bit later on today. Yeah, we could be able to see this, even the islands to the east of St. John, the BVI. So today's a high visibility day, VI and HV today, okay? By the way, today is Super Tuesday, right? Big primary day. Dwayne Henry going to be joining me in a little bit to break that down. 16 states and American Samoa going to be participating in the nominating process, because that's what the primaries are. American Samoa, they're going to hold a caucus, and the Republican caucus on Friday, though. But today, they're going to be a part of the Democratic. And we're going to break that down a little bit. We should also be hearing from Lorna Nichols. There's a road closure on St. Croix that she wants to update us on as well. Big day yesterday for Trump on multiple fronts. Great, great news on the Supreme Court. A unanimous rejection. A slapping down, so to speak, legally speaking, of the Colorado Supreme Court's decision to remove the former president off the ballot. Supreme Court said no. No. 9-0. You're going to stay on the ballot. It's too late now. And we don't want to send the country into utter chaos. But they did. Their explanation is something I'm looking forward to talking to Dwayne Henry about, because kind of confusing if you ask me. The ruling was expected, right? Because ultimately, you know, you want to handle these things at the ballot box. But their argument, even though they got a unanimous ruling, the three liberal, quote-unquote, justices, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, they stated basically what you're doing now is you're opening the window for questions about whether states actually have rights. And apparently they said it went too far. So we're gonna have a good discussion with that one as well, to break that down. So, and then in the New York front, apparently the president's CFO yesterday pleaded guilty to perjury in New York. So, when Trump lose, Trump win. When Trump win, Trump lose. I mean, just total chaos and mass confusion, according to EPMD. You know what I'm saying? Total chaos and mass confusion. But it's good for the media, because they make money. And that's what Trump is a needle mover when it comes to media. There's no doubt about it, right? He's a energizer, and it's going to be interesting So that's how we can break that down as well. Also, in the Middle East, that ceasefire position is ramping up, and they're hoping to have that in place by next week, Sunday, or Monday at the latest, because that's when Ramadan starts. And, of course, you know, Ramadan is the holy window for the Muslim faith. So keep an eye on that. Well, we hope it lasts forever, the ceasefire. You know. But Ronnie Russell made a good point. That war over there is perpetual, man. You know, and hopefully they could understand over there that peace is the deal, you know. But for some reason, certain people, if they ain't warring, they ain't comfortable. And that's crazy. When I see these photos of innocent children getting caught up in a senseless, stupid, political grab for power type of thing there. Wow. Maybe sometimes a lot of us in the civilized world here on the western side, we're disputes of that type of nature in many instances don't exist. Not to say it can't happen, because things can happen overnight, but it could happen at any time, man. You know, and it's unfortunate what's going on over there. It really is. And I know that the blame is, the word is genocide, and the blame is America and all that, but Hamas started this. And Israel screwed it up. Right? And it's unfortunate that it's like that. We got Lorna Nichols on the line from the Virgin Islands Waste Management Authority. Good morning, Lorna. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Neville. Good morning to all your listeners. How's everything? Everything okay?
Everything good.
That's cool. I just wanted to give all the listeners a brief update about the Christiansted project and sewer line replacement, manhole rehabilitation. And you can help me, Neville, if you can, with some of the streets, because I'm going to get them wrong. But we just want everybody, pedestrians and businesses and everybody, to know that they are going to be working from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. today. I know they're going to have two big excavators out on the job, a Bobcat, about 18 crew members. So the traffic is going to be really restricted today. King Street, West Street, New Street, Fisher Street, and that's the Peters Rest Farm Road. Peters Farm. I'm sorry. Peters Farm Road.
Yeah.
So it's going to be pretty busy, and we're putting some cones and everything out there, getting some signs out. But I just want to give everybody a heads up, because it's going to be a little brutal this morning. So if you could bear with us, and we are getting things done. We're finishing up the project as fast as we can and working through the day.
Did they say how far down King Street they're going? Because I know what you're talking about. You're talking about Basin Triangle.
Right.
And you take that, you're heading on King Street down into town. The next street you mentioned is New Street, right?
Right.
And then you mentioned Fisher Street.
Right.
And you mentioned West Street, right?
Yeah.
Now, for those who don't know, if you're going into Christiansted Town, West Street is at the Anglican Church. And you take that down into the Watergate area to heading towards the D. Hamilton Jackson area, right?
Right, exactly. Okay, yeah.
Okay. The street that takes you to Peters Farm, I believe that's New Street. That's New Street. That's the one after you come through the Basin Triangle. Well, of course, you can't come through it today because it's blocked off, right?
Right.
But
right,
that's the one that takes you to Peters Farm, right, from King Street. Right.
Okay. Yeah. The Peters Farm, and
I don't know what I call it first. Yeah. No. Peters Rest. That's logical, because Peters Rest is a very popular street over here. So, but it's Peters Farm, and then Fisher Street is up on the backside. That's by the bypass.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's by the bypass. So, okay. Okay. Yeah, no, so, downtown Christiansted is not impacted today, right?
Exactly. And this world, we're going to do the best we can. Also, I'm going to try to get Ron Phillips on with you when you get a chance, you know, when you get some time, just to go over each and every park and the time and when they're going to be out there and just some more information for the public.
Okay, not a problem. So, this is from 8 a.m. all now until 6 p.m.?
Exactly, and it'll be probably, and I'm more than likely it'll be the same tomorrow, and it's just during the week.
Yeah, well, we saw it beginning on Saturday, because I went to drop my mom to choir practice, and I saw the guys working up there at the corner of King Street and West Street, so.
Okay.
So we've been seeing that. Okay. Okay, we're good. And we'll let them know. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay.
All right. So, yeah. So, can I come to Basin Triangle? You can come there, but you're going to be diverted down into Watergut. And I've been noticing that, right? Right? Or you go hang a right and head towards the bypass through Contentment. Okay? That whole area there of western suburb. I should have mentioned that, right? The western suburb area of Christiansted, right? Which is the Moravian Church. You're heading towards, at the left-hand side, Jiffy Mart, right? And then ABS Printing. And then you get to St. John's Episcopal Church. That whole area, they're working on that road, they block off. And apparently they're going up New Street from King Street up to Peter's Farm. Okay? That takes you up to the bypass. That's, for those of you who don't know, the infamous, the one and only Nookie Dials, right? Nookie Dials on the right hand side, right? With the still, right? That whole area there. Okay? Administration in conjunction with the Waste Management Authority, right? WAPA, Public Works, and Waste Management Authority. Look, 2024 had better be a high volume year as it relates to road work. Okay? This area got to be the year. Okay? Because the seeds were planted in late 2023 to the point where it was impacting businesses in downtown Christiansted. Knock out all of them road job, or as many as you can in 2024, please. Okay? Begging of you. Okay? So that come the fall of this year, we ain't no balling, right? And rightful balling that we need for the businesses in the downtown Christiansted area to have a much better holiday season than they did in the previous one. I'm saying, I go get Jomo McLean and Derek Gabriel back on. to see if they could update us as to road projects and all that stuff. Okay? Because they got other areas as well, too. I'm telling you, over there in the farmland area, the halfland area, we need to do some serious road paving out in the countryside as well. I keep teasing Dwayne Henry. I keep telling him we're in the wrong business because heavy equipment and road paving. That's what we should have gotten into. Then, of course, you know, you run the risk of dealing with what the contractors complain about. Say, can't get paid. Can't get paid. I want my money. You know what I mean? So, but, yo. You got assets, right? And you got collateral. So it's all that good stuff. So let me go over the 16 states, right, that are participating in today's Super Tuesday primary, okay? Alphabetically, okay? Alabama, which is red. Alaska, which is red, but they got a little independence side to them. Arkansas is red. California is blue. Colorado is blue. Maine is mostly blue. when they got a little independence to them as well. Massachusetts is blue. Minnesota is a swing state, blue, kind of purplish, but mostly blue. Carolina is trending towards purple, but it's still red. North Carolina. Oklahoma is red. Tennessee is red. Texas is actually burnt orange. But Texas is red. I said burnt orange because the University of Texas Longhorns, that's the color. Utah is very red, right? It's also Mormon. Vermont is blue. Virginia is blue now. Virginia used to be a swing state, right? Of course, you know, things could turn back to the middle at any time, but based on the election, they got two chambers now, got both chambers in the face of a Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin. So that could be swingish and purple, but the trend in blue. And the U.S. territory of American Samoa will be caucusing. And Democrats in Iowa will release the results of their presidential preference caucus, right? American Samoa's Republican presidential caucus will be held on Friday. This is an NPR story, right? Because voting will take place across 6 time zones, right? It may take hours and days to determine the winners of delegates and the winning party candidates to move on to the general elections for governor, state legislature, and congressional seats. In some states, it may take longer to count mail-in ballots. For example, California. In California, mail-in ballots must be postmarked by March 5th, today, and received by county elections officers by March 12th. Okay? Meaning not all votes will be tallied on Tuesday, especially for races with close margins. Final polls will start closing at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in Virginia and Vermont. Now, you know, the presumptive nominees for the presidential race on both sides are pretty much known, right? It's going to be a repeat of the 2020. So it's looking like that. We're still 8 months away, and a lot could happen, you know what I'm saying, and for various reasons. Clearly, age is a factor with both of them, one being 81, one being 77. And then, you know, you got the legal issues for Trump, and you got all kind of issues that Democrats like to bring up for their candidates. For Biden, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. Now, yesterday was critical, as the Supreme Court said, you know, telling all the states, which was Colorado, Maine, and Illinois, and all that, you know, yo, we don't want any more chaos. Knock it off. And they also told Congress that y'all got work to do to actually, fortify, buttress the 14th Amendment of Article 3. Got work to do. Hopefully, Dwayne Henry will join us in a little bit. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With 2 locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are not afraid to stand up to the high and mighty like Jeff Bezos.
He had that big cowboy hat on. He looked like a shrink ray had hit Garth Brooks.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join me as we speak truth to power, at least until power agrees to buy us out, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. Wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here and analyze this and just breaking down some of the states and their individual notes that they're looking at. California is a high profile primary today because, of course, you know, Dianne Feinstein, she passed away recently, and her seat is currently filled by Senator LaFonza Butler. And they got a very high-profile primary going on over there. Even Steve Garvey, the former baseball player for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres, he is running as a Republican. And their primary, I believe, is open. Right? Senate primary, California. Right? And Adam Schiff is also running for that seat. There's a story on ABC News where they say California Senate primary race pits Schiff and other Democrats against the GOP's Garvey. Right? And they said 27 candidates have filed for the Feinstein seat. The four leading contenders are Democratic representatives Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, who's come onto the scene with Gangbusters, and she's real good. Barbara Lee, who I believe is a friend of Delegate Plaskett, plus Republican Steve Garvey, a former Major League Baseball player. They are running not only to fill Feinstein's 2025 open seat, but also to complete her term in the final weeks of 2024. This deep blue state has a top two primary, meaning all candidates run against each other on the same ballot, regardless of party. So the question is whether it will be a heated campaign between two Democrats, or if Republican challenger Garvey will wiggle his way into the final two. A Republican hasn't won a Senate seat in California since 1988. Of California's 22 million registered voters, 47% are Democrats, compared to 24% registered as Republicans, according to the California Secretary of State, right? So, you do the math, right? If you get 22 million voters, half of that is 11, right? Then take out another 3%, right? So if you got 11 million voters, that means 10% is 1.1. That means 1% is 110,000. So 330,000, right? Subtract that from 11 million. So you got 10,670,000 registered Democrats. Half of that among the Republicans, right? And then another 28% are other parties, Libertarian, Green, Independent, what have you, right? So this election has already become the most expensive in the state's history. Both Schiff, a leading voice in the two impeachments of former President Donald Trump, and Porter, who rose to prominence for her questioning of corporate leaders, have raised an impressive amount of money. According to FEC reports, Schiff has raised $29.8 million in net contributions as of mid-February, plus the $21 million he had left in his house account. Porter, meanwhile, has collected $16.7 million, combining that with the $7.4 million she had left over after her re-election win in 2022. Lee, who is one of the most progressive voting, who has one of the most progressive voting records in the House, has raised only $4.8 million in net contributions. So when you add this up, you got $50.8 for Adam Schiff, $24.1 for Katie Porter. $50.8, that's $74.9. And then another 4.8. So that's 79.7 million dollars for just these three candidates alone. Right? Schiff, they say Schiff has used his haul to launch a heavy ad campaign that labels Garvey as a threat to Democrats in Congress. Right? So it's interesting in a sec. Porter, who is 2 points behind Garvey, according to the 538 polling average, and Lee, who is trailing the pack by a large margin, are the two main progressives in the fight. Both Porter and Lee have said Schiff's anti-Garvey ads could embolden Republicans and encourage higher voter turnout among that base, thus jeopardizing tight down-ballot races. A Garvey win could also deliver Schiff an easier general election win, they have added. Right? The supporter has repeatedly labeled the tactic as brazenly cynical and has coined it the Schiff gift. And that's, you know, that's just how it plays out. You know, if Garvey does well, I mean, he's taking votes from Porter and Lee. And I mean, Garvey going to end up against Schiff down the road. And ultimately, the Democrat is going to win based on just raw numbers. But you never know. Right? Excuse me. So it's going to be interesting. That Senate race going to be very, very high profile. And they're going to be late, too, because polls closing at 7. That's 11 o'clock our time, 10 p.m. Eastern time. I got Dwayne Henry joining me out to provide some more analysis on Super Tuesday, the big primary day in America, in particular in the presidential year. Good morning, Counselor. How are you?
Good morning, Senator James. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So, first of all, big primary day today, Super Tuesday, man.
Yes. You know, that's the big day. Usually, they're going to put enough, if both candidates going to put enough distance between them and whoever they're behind them to make it, like, mathematically impossible. But at the same time, they can't get enough delegates today to actually win the nomination. So there are going to be some more primaries after this necessary.
Now, 16 states and American Samoa and the Democratic side, American Samoa are going to do their thing on the Republican side on Friday, right? And they're on the other side, of the dateline, right?
Yes, they're like, oh, man, about
16, 17 hours. 17 hours, right? So that's going to be interesting. You got a number of states here, right, that are trending from what they typically were and are into that purple area. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, North Carolina prominently won.
Even Virginia got a Republican governor, but both chambers are run by Democrats right now.
They're exactly. I was going to say Virginia is expected to actually go purple this year. I think the Northern Virginia, the population. When you look at the population of Virginia, you know that's how these things work. You know, Northern Virginia has a lot of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
People that work in D.C. but you know live over there, and then you have AOL and Amazon building something there, so there's a lot of
yes.
things that get even more purple.
Yes, yes, that's a
they,
good.
They might go blue.
That's a good point.
5-10 years.
By the way, Nikki didn't get a win going into Super Tuesday. You know, she went D.C.
yes. You know, and for Trump, them are spinning it like, oh yeah, she's the queen of the swamp.
I didn't campaign there, so you know all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? But yeah.
Well, you know that's basically what he's saying is because the politicians in D.C. don't vote in D.C. obviously because they're from other states. So to call it the swamp, to call the voters the swamp is actually a dog whistle slow as to the racial makeup of well, what used to be called Chocolate City.
Used to be.
Yeah, he's actually slurring the electorate, you know, because by calling them the swamp. Because, you know, you can't say that. And somebody said, I saw on Excel, the elites won. There's no elites voting in D.C. That's Anacostia and Trinidad, Northeast, and I mean, that's who voted there. Of course, there's some yuppies around Adams Morgan and, you know, a couple, you know, there's you know, new people that came in. But 80-60% of the population is middle class and poor working class blacks.
Chocolate City, as we know it in the Marion Barry days, is no more.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. When we was in college and stuff, you go to D.C., you know, when you're talking about going on there, same by Moochie and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different city. It's very different now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the president of the city council is a white guy.
That's right. You know? That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, when you hear Dwayne Henry referencing Be Staying by Moochie, we're talking about Evita Shang Patton, right? Affectionately known as Moochie, right? And and her late husband, Ray Patton. He was the man.
DJ.
You know what I'm saying? He was the man. And very respectful and a Yankee come down here and take one of our finest.
Right. And her, you know, full credit, she has a very smart son and a very smart daughter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, Davin and Dalila. Davin and Dalila are nice, man.
Yes, man.
Yeah. So we giving the family the whole run on this morning. Okay, don't take it down to me when you see me, but you treated me like family.
She's not slouch.
No. Muchi no pia pia. You know what I mean? And also educator, right? I work at St. Mary's School and all that stuff.
Yes.
And Ray Patton. He was actually an assistant commissioner for I believe it was Ramon Davila at one point.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
In the Schneider. Yeah.
Did he come down here with the
Fountain Valley? Yeah, he came with Fountain Valley in the 70s and all that stuff. And he was a FBI guy. You know what I mean? Who looked out for the Virgin Islands.
Special agent.
Yeah, and he looked out for the Virgin Islands. You know what I mean? So the great Ray Patton. You know what I'm saying? So you just want to get it there. And that you know, I'm glad you bring that up because, you know, the show is a local show and we need that flavor ever so often to let the public know that. We got bigger powers and we let people know that we know people. We know each other. Yeah. That's how small we are. You know what I'm saying? So I'm glad that you went there. No, yesterday, as expected, the Supreme Court slapped down the Colorado Supreme Court 9-0, unanimous.
Uh-huh.
Even though there were some concurrence in certain parts and not in totality, that was pretty much expected, right?
Yes, because you know, like I said, that's when. Remember when I talk, I said when I especially talk about the Supreme Court and how decisions coming now, and I say the court doesn't want to deliver an absurd result.
Mm-hmm.
You're a ruling that's going to result in absurdity or chaos, and that's exactly what happened. Not that the court's saying that he can't get removed, but it says you can't have 50 states deciding who's going to be on a federal ballot and who's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all the court really said there. I mean, well, the base of the argument, of the opinion, of course, the Republican majority probably went a little further and said some other things. But
they actually said that Congress got some work to do. To tighten that up. Where there are those who are saying, you know, we shouldn't get in the business of interpreting law based on an expectation from Congress. You got to judge law on its face. So how do you go about reconciling that concern, which to me sounds legitimate?
Yeah, it is legitimate. That genie already out there. They already ruled. So what Congress needs to do is go ahead and implement some legislation, which, you know, the chances of that happening in this Congress and probably the next is next to nil.
Yeah. No. Here's how you're going to say it. Slim and none. And Slim just take the seaplane to go to Puerto Rico.
Well, there you go. So none is left. But it's not going to happen, and that's why, you know, I think that's why the conservative majority threw that language
mm-hmm.
in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, even Amy Coney Barrett was pissed off with that.
Yeah.
You know? She said, look, you guys, we should just rule on the question and move on. Congress will know what it needs to do.
Yeah.
But to put out the outline a bunch of things to say, okay, this can't happen until A, B, C, D, and E, is almost a late overreach in terms of, you know, for what's supposed to be a conservative court.
Mm-hmm. And then, so now people are asking, they're speculating, did they rule this way now because they know they're going to rule against immunity down the road? So they're trying to make it seem like there's balance as it relates to rulings in Supreme Court?
It's not some people. I actually believe that. I keep saying, especially with the immunity case, you can't have an absurd result.
Mm-hmm.
I will be actually attempting to leave this country if this court comes back and says that he has absolute immunity. I cannot fathom that.
A president has absolute immunity.
Right. I cannot fight because it would mean, what's his name, Nito Godong, and Constitution Avenue and start with our AR-15 and start shooting people. Joe Biden,
mm-hmm.
because,
mm-hmm.
you know, he got two defenses, he too old, and he and he got immunity anyway.
And a stiff back.
Yes, you know, so We gotta
fix that. When we come back, I want to talk about a serious development because it looks like, you know, this thing never ends. You had the CFO who pled guilty yesterday to perjury, right? Which is very serious because in fact, he's not going to testify, the question is, has he handed over documentation, right? In return for 5 months at Rikers. You know what I'm saying? So
obviously, there's something that's a quid. You know, that's how these plea deals work. You got to give something to get something.
We're going to take a break and pick up the discussion. I know when we come right back. Be back right after this.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Meet six extraordinary women who forged their own answers to a profound question.
As a Black woman, how does it feel to be free?
Lena Horne, Abby Lincoln.
They blaze such a trail.
Nina Simone.
Voice of the civil rights movement.
Cicely Tyson.
Accepted for her talent alone.
Diane Carroll.
We're at a new crossroad.
Pam Grier.
First female action hero in American film.
Look for How It Feels to Be Free.
We'll see what happens here.
On American Masters.
Tune in March 9th at 8 p.m. on WTJX TV Channel 12.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party, or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression, and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here on Analyze This, and we got Dwayne Henry on the line. We were talking about a development that took place yesterday in New York. I think we're about 3 weeks away from the New York case, right? The Alvin Bragg case. That's the hush. That's the hush money case, right? That's what they call it, right? And apparently, Trump's seat. Let me see. Hold on. I want to make sure I get this story right. Trump's ex-Trump organization CFO Alan Weisselberg pleads guilty to perjury charges. Now, apparently, this perjury took place. You said Weisselberg admits he committed conduct pertaining to sworn testimony on May 12th. 2023 and October 10, 2023 regarding the size of Trump's Fifth Avenue Manhattan triplex. So yesterday they said, are you pleading guilty because you are guilty? The Manhattan judge asked during Weisselberg's court appearance Monday. His reply, yes, right? They said Weisselberg conceded he knowingly misled investigators about his knowledge of the size of the Trump Tower triplex in order to obtain favorable loans, insurance rates, and other economic benefits, according to Gary Fishman, who presented the perjury case for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Do you admit to all of that, the judge asks? Yes, Your Honor. Perjury, quote, perjury tears at the very fabric of our justice system, Fishman said. Right? And the judge said that Weisselberg, who turned 77 in August, will be sentenced to 5 months in jail on April 10th. He was released on his own recognizance. What kind of chaos is going on here? What does this mean in terms of what the district attorney for Manhattan is looking for in the grand scheme? Or is this just a narrow, isolated situation with a Trump employee?
No, this is what happened. During the civil case, he testified that he didn't know about the evaluation of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I don't know how they found out, but they apparently got a telephone call they got information where he was well involved in evaluation of the properties and were calling and were regularly briefed on what was put into these applications, which is totally contrary to what he testified and said. So when they the attorney general turned it over to the DA, and the DA prosecuted him, and the DA says, hey, you committed perjury in this case, and we have the evidence. And they had, like I said, they probably had wiretaps. They don't say how they know, but they had enough to that he cut a deal quick. The civil trial just ended a month ago. So, you know, for a perjury thing to come down this quick, mean that they probably knew before he testified that he knew, but they just wanted to see what he was going to say.
We got Hannah Butterbrand joining the discussion. And he's a defense counselor par excellence. By the way, it's my understanding that he's made a parallel or tangential move. Good morning, counselor. How are you?
Good morning, and good morning to your listening audience. Yes, I. If you mean that I'm not at the Territorial Public Defender's Office anymore, yes, that's true.
Well, look now, enlighten the public, man.
Well, they've established a new office called the Office of Conflict Counsel, and I'm the Chief Conflict Counsel. This is an organization that exists wherein the public defender's office, there are times when they have either multiple defendants or there's a circumstance where there's a conflict with the public defender's office. So,
what's the name again?
The Office of Conflict Counsel, or OCC.
Okay. I learned something this morning. We know about OPP, but now we know about the OCC.
You know, with OCC.
So Hannibal is down with the OCC. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know.
Yes, sir. I like that one. I like that rhyme. So congratulations, counselor, and I know you're gonna be successful in that endeavor. But let me talk defense. As it relates to what's going on here, you have a civil trial, actually two of them, right? One was for defamation with E. Jean Carroll, so we're going to touch that one, because that one, it is what it is. The big one really was, inflating your value to get financial benefits and all that stuff. And then subsequently, you get a guilty plea for perjury with someone who was your CFO. He wasn't just a fringe player. He's the chief financial officer of that particular organization. In return for this perjury plea, is there something else that the district attorney of Manhattan is looking for or has gotten in likelihood from a historical standpoint? Or is this just an isolated situation related to him?
Well, if you recall, I think it was about a week ago, the judge in the Letitia James trial,
Judge Engelron,
right. He asked the counsels, "Was there a crime committed in my court?"
Yo, and that was actually like 3 weeks ago. Yeah, that was like 3 weeks ago because Letitia was saying, excuse me, AG James was saying, "I hope this doesn't hold up the verdict or the penalty." The issuance of the penalty, but he did ask that question, correct? Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that he asked that question because of the fact that the lawyers, you see, people believe that lawyers simply go in there and parrot whatever their clients want them to advance without question. But there is a thing called an ethical obligation that each lawyer has when they go into court, especially when a specific question is put to them regarding the testimony that they have suborned, as is the term. For example, if I know that my client is going to testify untruthfully, but they insist on testifying, which is their right to do, there are certain steps that I'd have to take. I'd have to first, and out of the earshot of the jury, approach the bench and tell the court that my client is going to be testifying in the narrative. That alerts the court to the fact that this isn't stuff that I'm soliciting from this particular person.
Mm-hmm.
And for this person says, this person is saying on their own volition and against my ethical obligation. The second thing is if you find out later on that your client has gone afoul of the truth while they testified under oath, and the judge puts the question directly to you, you have an ethical obligation to answer truthfully within the bounds of what you know. And that's where we were with the lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in a circumstance where they were hemming and hawing rather than coming out definitively. And the only thing that they, the only recourse they had was to not answer the question, which is an answer in of itself.
No. Let me ask this question. Dwayne, the ruling, I believe, was what, $355 million? And then you got another $95 million in interest. So people are of the belief that this is excessive and all that stuff. But isn't this a calculated penalty?
Absolutely. They don't just pull this. Remember, the judge did this. A jury is supposed to do the same thing. They're supposed to actually sit down and calculate damages. But a jury will tend to be more speculative and subjective sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see a lot of jury awards reduced by judges. Judges tend to be, because that those clerks, those legal clerks are going to sit down and they're going to do an economic, that's why it took him a while. They're going to do an economic evaluation, pull in experts if they have to and say, look, this is what it's worth. So I think that's a good number.
No. Attorney O'Brien, disgorgement is the term that a lot of us learned recently. And that means what, by definition, for those who are listening?
You know, there are some terms that even lawyers have to look up when they're confronted with them, especially when they practice in another area.
Mm-hmm.
That it doesn't come up in very often.
Uh-huh. Well, then I go ask this question. Did you have to look up disgorgement, young man?
I would have to look it up. I would never give a definition of that until I have sat down with some entity, usually a Black's Law Dictionary,
mm-hmm.
and say, what is this? read it, and then go back to something that further elucidates its meaning. Before I would advise somebody or to take the position that I'm going to tell the general public what it means. You see.
Another good name for it is a clawback. When you've received a benefit, financial especially,
mm-hmm.
and you improperly received it or illegally received it, and sometimes the law provides mechanisms to disgorge it from you, meaning to dig it out of the pot of stuff that you have. That's where that term comes from. It's a digging. Like if you had a field, you will disgorge a tree out of there or something. You plant. You see what I'm saying?
So mm-hmm.
it actually comes from. It's a natural, a geological term that's applied to financial thing where when you accumulate wealth based on something, they can go and just cut that out and take it back.
But that's a significant number there, $355 million.
Yes, when you look at the value of the properties and the loans that were received.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the judge was actually obligated to lay that out in the ruling, right?
Yeah.
So and he yeah. broke he
they
broke he broke.
How they got at that number?
He broke it down. That $450 million, which include $95 million in interest. Hannibal, the Michael Cohen dynamic, where he already solved time, and there's a legitimate question about his credibility, even though Judge Engoron found him to be credible. Word is that he actually said he knew all along that partner was lying. Weisselberg, like two of them were in the inner sanctums of the Trump organization. So he's going to play a part in this Alvin Bragg case coming up in another 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, first of all, he's served his time. He's done his penalty. I mean, he has absolutely nothing to lose to be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
Which, ironically bolsters his credibility. Now, people got to keep in mind what his role was. He was considered Mr. Fix-It.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if they're familiar with the series, You Better Call Saul, you know, that's pretty much a picture of what his job was within the whole grand scheme of things, which is to put a Band-Aid on whatever the circumstance was. And that doesn't always mean being above board, you know, in the grand scheme of business. You know, but, you know, what the American public is already aware of is the fact that within the context of so-called legitimate businessmen who's, you know, who's rugged individualists, there's been many Michael Cohens or Michael Cohen-type situations that has contributed to, for example, Carnegie and the railroad barons, et cetera.
Pierpont Morgan, is that about?
You know, I mean, let's face it, you know, if you go into an objective history of many of these individuals who are at the frontier of American development, you will find that they were involved in some sort of nefarious activity that was able to turn it into legitimate business.
Yeah, we the term that we use nowadays, Dwayne Henry and Hannibal, is shady. You know what I'm saying? That shady type of activity. You know, today's Super Tuesday. We got 16 states. Of course, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion who the nominees are going to be for the two big parties. But the process is still a beautiful process where people get a chance to exercise their right to vote. This is a nominating election, by the way, for those who don't know. Primary is a nominating election. Where folks determine who is going to be representing that particular party in the general election. And we got 16 different states, and we got American Samoa on the Democratic side. Today, American Samoa going to be in the Republican side on Friday. The Iowa, they went a different route. They're going to provide the results for the Democratic preference from their caucus, because they weren't a part of that January caucus that starts the proceedings. Hannibal O'Brien, congratulations with your new job with the OCC. And looking forward to talking with you again in the future. And Dwayne Henry, more boys too. We're going to wrap up tomorrow. And Hannibal, if you're available, let me know. We're going to wrap up of Super Tuesday tomorrow as well. Okay, gentlemen?
He should be available.
He should be available, right? Okay, good. I like the song of that. Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks a lot, gentlemen. We'll take a break. I'll be back tomorrow. Be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Ah, sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.